Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, that's right. As always, right here in my studio, all by my lonesome, just like I always am.
Justin Robert Young.
I'm here in the studio too. Brian has already told his first of many lies. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, as the myth lamestream Brushwood continues to fill your ears with the fibs he has done for years.
E-I-B. Yeah.
We'll be right back on the E-I-B.
Mr. Snurdly. Gentlemen, do you hear that? Do you hear the sound of that?
Is that the world's tiniest violin weeping for our loss at the movie draft? No.
I actually muted you trying to turn down my volume.
What? I give that excuse to myself too. I'm just muting myself to turn down my volume.
I don't know what that sound is. It's very distinct, but I can't make it out, Andrew.
Is it the sound of money being spent?
Oh yes, that's definitely part of it, gentlemen. It's the call. It's this. Imagine Uncle Sam, but he's in a spacesuit, or maybe it's a space chimp. Maybe it's like Abel or Ham pointing towards you saying, I want you for the Space Corps.
Oh. Okay, now Space Corps sounds to me, we're looking at a picture of it right now. It sounds to me like straight out of Starship Troopers. I mean, not that I wouldn't join the Starship Troopers cosplay. That would be a great squadron cosplay, by the way.
Co-ed showers, I mean... I was watching that, like, sign me up. Like, grab ass and slap tout those hotties in there. I'm like, all right.
I know.
From integrated military, right? Not accurately reflective views of weird things. We encourage a very dynamic work environment free of sexual harassment.
What is the Space Corps? Is this an actual government institution?
So the idea is the thought that perhaps what we need to do is not unlike... at one point we had like the Air Force. There was actually just the Army had an Air Force, and we said, we need our separate Air Force. We created the Air Force. The Marines, which are actually under, let's say, the Navy, but the Marines are their own part of the Pentagon. Like you've got Navy, Air Force, Marines, Army, Coast Guard, which is actually, we forget that often, but that's an armed force. And the idea is to create a new one, a sixth one, Space Corps.
That's a pretty badass name. I mean, by and large, even the Coast Guard is probably the best way that you could name, unless it was just like the Sea Fighters or something. that's a good ass name.
Sea Warriors.
Yeah, and I'm down with Space Corps.
So the premise is based upon the idea that as we expand more into space, and space becomes a very, very important. It's strategically, crucially important. You take out our satellites, you take out what's defending us there. Absolutely important. The idea that if you're putting missiles or other technologies up there, and that we maybe need to have our own branch dedicated to protecting our space superiority, or just protecting, being able to defend and protect us from threats that are space related.
I mean, it's kind of a necessity at a certain point, right? Like, this is about the time where we should start thinking about the fact that more and more private stuff is going to go up there, and there can be problems that need to be mediated.
Would it be too Infowars.com for me to speculate out loud that some version of this already exists and is just looking for an official name and source of funding? Like, I mean, you telling me there's not some, operatives that are trained, specifically to handle space missions?
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily that. I mean, like within the Air Force, there is the Space Command Wing, which handles a number of these things, and that's sort of their purview right now. And some people in the Air Force, like, we've got this. Why do you want to create a separate organization? And there's pro and con to the idea of creating a separate entity for doing it. The pro is it's like, well, that's great. You're focused on air and, you know, you're providing magician support, things like this, all this. Space is a separate sort of thing, and that we need to have somebody responsible for. That's their priority of space defense. And think of it as you have growing, you know, China's been, they had a, you know, mishap with the Long March, but China is aggressively pursuing their own space opportunities. China's already destroyed one of their own satellites in orbit to see what could happen, which, you know, could have caused, you know, a cataclysm. And you could have one small minor event could cause a big problem there. And the idea of, let's say, a space corps is to say, we need a group that's focused purely on that. That's what they're looking at, is they're looking for those threats and trying to figure out how to protect our interests.
So I wonder, okay, so let's speculate and fantasize wildly about what this would look like. Because I would imagine to some degree, you know, when you think of the Army, when you think of the Marines, you think of boots on the ground, you think of bodies that are stronger, tougher, faster, and go farther and hold their breath longer and stuff. I don't know that that quite does the whole job for a space corps. I guess they would also have to test very well in matters of 3D rotation, of instinctual understanding of orbital mechanics and that kind of stuff.
I guess you keep thinking about physical people, but like when I think of the Air Force, I think of like how so much of it's just drones. It's automated. It's machines. It's doing that sort of thing. And I don't know if we're talking about actually like astronauts and troops training for space missions as much as just an agency, like how we have parts of the Air Force which monitors our satellites and stuff.
Well, what I would imagine is that the reason why they would want to branch out and do something different is that they will now have their own budget that they wouldn't have dependent on the Air Force, right?
Yes.
And
yeah, that's a big part of it, because you take like every Air Force cost overrun for some fighter or some technology takes away from other parts of that.
Yeah.
Where if you're a separate space corps, you can say we want X, Y, or Z, you know, and that's the problem we run into all the time in the military. We've have our literal ships programs. We've had programs, which, you know, naval things that hugely expensive that have drained our capabilities in other areas. And the idea is it's like, that's that, you know, corps problem, not ours.
Yeah. And one would imagine that if you are going to continue to have your own budget funded, that you would want to be doing it while out there in the world there is more and more news about space and things that are going on up there and things that could go wrong potentially. Like that.
And I would say, to Brian's point, sooner you can start training actual people to do space missions.
Absolutely.
And stuff, and say that we're doing repair, we're doing these sort of things, and putting bodies in space for that. That's kind of, from a PR point of view, that's kind of awesome.
Well, sure. And it's kind of, you know, if you are in these forms of government, right? And theoretically, the absolute worst case scenario that can happen to you is you giving the answer, we don't have an answer for that, right? Like,
yeah,
you would need it now. I mean, like, we're not far away from a huge boom. We're already seeing a huge boom in private interaction with space because rockets are getting cheaper. And we are only going to see more of that. We're only going to see more governmental work like that as the technology curve kind of flattens out a little bit. And I don't know. It as much as it is right now, you know, it's telling that the image that we want to put on these stories are Starship Troopers. It is just kind of a realistic thing that we should be paying attention to.
Certainly, you know, it's the degree to which it's just going to be drones and robots and everything else doing that, I think that's the thing that sort of like kind of the larger reality of that is. But, you know, we have this, you know, you have China, which is spending tremendous amounts of money trying to develop their space program as quickly as they can and trying to catch up with the rest of the world. And in their mind, they want to, you know, surpass. And you're looking at the frontier of this, where you have people talking about, sober, sane people talking about mining the moon, you know.
Yeah.
The value of putting things into orbit, having control over certain orbital patterns, et cetera. It's only going to become, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger. And so, you know, the con to the Space Corps is, yeah, it becomes another big, huge agency that soaks up money and, you know, and maybe has overreaching conflicts with other organizations. Like, I know the Air Force isn't too thrilled about the idea of having that, because they look at so much of what they do is space and satellite.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I can understand where there is going to be intergovernmental tension, but
yeah.
And I don't know, but I guess, that to me seems like far more of just an inter Pentagon, kind of argument on whether or not the issue should be the Air Force modernizing to focus more on this, or if it's a new program, a new thing altogether.
Yeah, we're going to have, more discussions. It's sort of some of that just it's been floated before and mentioned before. But, it does. I mean, I'm just saying, Brian, earlier to your point, it will grow into something where we would have, manned satellites and things like that and stations and stuff, because that's part of the thing that if you're going to want to repair a satellite or fix something really, really fast, and it's a military asset like the Hubble missions, then yeah, you're going to need people who have the skill sets you were describing earlier. That is, I see that as an inevitability.
Man, I wonder if what would they look like? Do you think they would be essentially
chimpanzees,
cyborgs? Well, chimpanzees. Do we talk about this on the air before? I've heard about a video. I've not seen it, but apparently there is a viral video out there somewhere of chimpanzees doing extraordinary number memorization in an extremely short amount of time.
Oh yeah, they have better memorization than we do.
Right. So it's like they'll be flashed a screen with a bunch of numbers, and then in order when that'll be gone, and they will touch all the right spots in the right order of where all the numbers were in just superior to humans' ability to do the same thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe they would be like, here we go. I think we're looking at it right now. It says symbolic representation and working memory in chimpanzees. Have you seen this before?
I've seen the research before of that, and actually on the extras for, I think, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, they actually show a clip.
Oh, really?
That makes sense. But that's interesting. So if we're thinking true blue sky out of the box thinking, I was gonna joke about cyborgs. But I guess really cyborg chimps might be a important part if they could translate things correctly.
I'm going to just sort of imagine it'll be people and robots for the foreseeable future, and not to say the other thing would be
not
true.
Not my mind, man. So many chimps.
It's smart chimps, sim chimps, whatever, from Clark. that was his thing, was like having the super intelligent chimps building space stations and stuff. And what could possibly go wrong with that? But yeah, we're looking at the chimpanzee doing the number task. Where
my God.
20 numbers on a screen, and then they keep it a shorter amount of time where the numbers go away. And it's incredible. They have aptitudes we don't have.
Yeah. That is crazy. Yeah, that is scary fast.
So we're going to find out more. We'll see, like, probably as, Congress meets and whatnot. We're going to have – we have now the Space Council, which has been restarted, which is going to be headed up by our Vice President Pence, which is going to meet and talk about space issues. And the goal of the Space Council is to come up with a sort of a unified vision for space, not just for what our purposes are, but also to figure out, all right, if NASA needs this rocket – and the Air Force needs this thing, could we use the same infrastructure for both instead of developing two separate projects? And, that's going to be kind of a goal towards, streamlining that, which is a good thing. It doesn't mean like, oh, we're only going to get one choice, but it does mean that we're going to do perhaps give more opportunities to Blue Origin and SpaceX. So.
Well, yeah. And that just seems like rewarding those that are moving things forward, right?
Well, so on the subject of that, Elon Musk this weekend had an interesting tweet.
All right. Everybody back up, push the couches back, because Andrew is about to take the widest, most jubilant victory lap that you have heard on this show in a very, very, very long time. Get your streamers ready, because here he goes. What did Elon Musk tweet?
Well, let's go back a couple months or a while and on these very microphones, one of us, I forget who, we're going to share credit, had postulated, had done kind of a, when Elon Musk first proposed the interplanetary transport system, the big, huge rocket ship, this thing they want to build after the Falcon, the thing that can go to Mars, the fully reusable rocket system, this thing was massive. And some people said, oh, wouldn't it be cheaper to build a smaller version? And I was first like, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't think there's a cost advantage to building a smaller version of it because your R&D and all that. And so I was one of these people like, why would you do smaller? Then I thought, you know, was going to visit the SpaceX factories and looking around. I'm like, oh, it's not so much smaller because your materials costs are lower. You do it smaller so you could use the existing infrastructure. Because when you're inside a SpaceX factory, you see like they make the rocket engines here. They make these things here. You've got the people. You've got the tooling. So if you could make your rockets there, and people are like, oh, because, man, there's a lot of speculation online. Like, you know, what if they just open up the rocket plant over here or whatever? Like, I'm sure they want to build up rocket plants in Florida or Alabama or Texas. But that takes years. It's not just a matter of a building. You know, there are like something like 6,000 employees at SpaceX. Thousands of them work at the main facility. And so if you want to build rockets in some other part of the country, it's not like you start next week. It takes several years to build up to that. Yeah. Your capital costs, your factory, your facility, your tooling, and your people is a huge expenditure. And that was one of the biggest problems facing the ITS was he wants to build this big rocket. Okay, are you going to build an entirely new rocket assembly? Because this thing, if you remember from the presentation, is 12 meters across. It's 36 feet across. It's huge. So on these microphones, somebody here speculated, said, hey, you know, since part of the core technology there is this new methane-based engines and carbon fiber technology, that maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to do a smaller scale rocket, not because, oh, we'll spend less, but because you could use the same factories they have now to do that. So somebody here proposed that. Somebody had speculated that perhaps we're going to see a revised, downscaled version of the ITS with, you know, And I would say that, you know, some of the reaction in the world was that's ridiculous, that's silly, or I'm just going to manufacture descent so it makes it sound more important.
Real quick, explain to me again the benefits of a scaled down ITS, why you would want it smaller. Like, what are the just for less fuel or?
No. It's you've been to the factory in Hawthorne, right?
Sure.
Okay. If you wanted to build something that was 12 meters across, 36 feet across, it wouldn't fit in there. You wouldn't be able to build that there.
Right. Okay.
You would have to have a new facility.
I see.
And,
okay, yeah. Got it. So you're not saying so it's not scaled cranes. Down. It's just maximizing the current factory is capable of doing. Got it. Yeah.
Exactly. You have this factory here. So what's the biggest? If you could say instead of trying to spend hundreds of millions or $1 billion on a new factory and take years to do it, what could we do here next year? You know.
Yeah.
And you could still build the same sized engines. Instead of 42, maybe you'd have 21 of them. You'd have the same technologies. It would just be at a different scale. And if that works, it would go there. And people speculation like use old shopping malls for assembly. That is your least cost. Your minimal cost is the actual building. And but then when you have to add gantries and all, it's the tooling. It's everything else. That's where the real expenses in the hiring. And again, you've got 6,000 people living in and around Hawthorne, California, working there to try to create and recreate that somewhere else in the country and start over is just, it's huge. And that's one of the things Elon Musk has made a point about, because you'll hear about some electric car company will show their prototype. And he's like, hey, the heart 99% of the job is actually going into production. You know, it's like any competent team of 30 or 40 people could produce a one-off. Trying to produce these things in scale, that's the hard part. And it's like rockets. It's like we look at the factory and think, the factory is the building. Like, the factory is the whole process.
It's the system. It's the people. It's the knowledge.
And that's the machine. And that's the other thing is number one, you know, I knew a couple of people that were looking for jobs at another electric car company that I'll just colloquially refer to as Meriday Mutual. And they were paying great. They were hiring all the right people, and they couldn't even get off the ground. You know, like to get into that is a huge thing. And not to mention, to get back to the rocket point, not only is it putting out all the money, not only is it building this place and staffing it, but it's also adding what I would imagine to be a fairly significant amount of risk that something's not going to be the same way that it is in this place where you've built all these rockets before. You're entering into just a new phase of making sure that you can build these things and they are as safe as they can. And for SpaceX, listen, as fast as they've gone, there was still a point about what, 3-4 months ago when they'd had a couple rockets blow up that you're like, well, geez, I'll tell you what, like this could be more of a problem if this happens on a regular basis.
Yeah. And they're couching the whole, like the idea when they launched the Falcon Heavy though, Elon has said, hey, this thing may only clear the launch pad. So he's trying to couch that, and it's problematic. So Elon Musk over the weekend sent out a tweet that sent all of your, you know, SpaceX hardcore fanboys, which I'm certainly not excluded from, all a flutter.
For the audio listeners, Andrew is currently wearing a SpaceX t-shirt and a SpaceX hat.
Yeah, not to mention my undergarments, but we don't need to get into the details of that. Elon Musk put out on Twitter, and as he's prone to doing with Twitter, as to getting people, he was just replying to somebody about like building, you know, something, whatever. He wrote, a 9 meter diameter vehicle fits in our existing factories. ...
So I'm sorry. I guess I don't know the, this is in direct response to the question of will you make a smaller one or?
It was somebody was talking about like size or whatever, about how do you, you know, moving something or whatever, and about, you know, vehicle or whatever. And then he just mentioned just casually like about the up, because he's going to do an update the end of September about the latest plans. And the rumor had been a downscaled ITS. And this is the first time we've heard Elon Musk specifically say 9 meter, which would be still a 27-foot diameter rocket, which would still be humongous, and it would be Mars capable, but it would be the idea of they've learned so much building their Falcon rockets. Like the Falcon rocket now, the Falcon 9 now, is in many ways a very different vehicle from the first Falcon 9. It's almost got like twice the thrust because of all the stuff that they've been able to figure out. And I could see them saying, okay, let's take everything we know now, and let's build an entirely next generation rocket that's methane based with the entirety of full reusability. So
yeah, man. No, that'd be huge. And so, of course, no, we won't hear anything until the next big update. But that certainly
is the end of September. Now, the advantage. Now, let me explain the advantage of this rocket. This, let's call it the nine meter. Is one is there's far more commercial capabilities. And he talked about the idea of something that could have more Earth applications, right? More Earth applications. What could we do, you know, in Earth orbit, which means Earth customers? Now, the bigger one would be awesome, but you know, only so many people are trying to launch massive payloads. And so if you have this rocket that's the largest rocket ever that's using, you know, equivalent of Saturn V level fuel every time to take off, even though it's reusable, you still got to figure out, you got to justify it with a bigger cargo load. Now, if you have a downscaled version of that, that makes lower cost payloads, and you could eventually start doing some of the Falcon missions and stuff on there. Although the Falcon 9 rocket has been doing some of the Falcon heavy missions because the Falcon 9 is more powerful than it was first conceived. Air Force has put out a call. The Air Force says that they're looking for a next generation launch vehicle. They could bid on this. You know, it wouldn't be able to fund the totality of it, but it would fund part of probably what they're looking to do this for. They're very strategic. You've heard Musk now, SpaceX did an appearance before Congress and our Senate and talked about, you know, missions. They talked about, you know, the moon's not a bad idea. Moon's capable. Build a base on the moon. Elon Musk has now said, you know, building a base on the moon wouldn't be a bad idea. This would be a rocket fully capable of doing that just in time for an administration that says, we want to go back and build a permanent presence.
That's awesome.
Well, and I think the bigger kind of meta headline is that the future will be here faster if this rocket is smaller. Right.
Agreed. Now, it's funny because you'll hear like, you go through some of the message boards, and they're like, oh, well, how are they going to get it out of Hawthorne? How are they going to get it out of there? Now, number one, they're not going to effing launch the rocket from the middle of downtown Los Angeles, folks. I'm sorry. That is not going to happen. You know, it's like people like, you know, people like, you know, it is a rocket that can take off and land. Like, no, he wants to build tunnels. Yes, he wants to build tunnels. Not so he can get his rocket out of there. And I remember reading one, you know, thread, and not to make, you know, somebody on the internet's wrong, but, you know, one person's like, it's going to cost a couple $1 billion for them to be able to get this thing out of the factory. Because, yeah, how would you move a massive space vehicle around Los Angeles? I think it's impossible unless Bryce has some video that can show otherwise. I'm saying, you know what? Oh, wait, what are we watching?
Oh, my God. This is Space Shuttle Endeavour's trek across Los Angeles, and it's leaving from what I would assume to be LAX. It was a United terminal there.
Yeah. And understand that's got about like a 60-foot wingspan. Okay. So that's about twice and 2.3 times like wider than the SpaceX next generation rocket or the booster would be. And also there's video of them moving the tank. The main fuel tank, which is actually
all I want to do is watch this video, listening to Dr. Dre's "Let Me Ride."
So you're watching the space shuttle being moved through Los Angeles, right? Randy's Donuts, right past Randy's Donuts, made famous in Iron Man. And they put it on this special platform. And so what the platform does is it can go sideways. It can move back and forth. And you're watching it like through just, you know,
it's just all this collection of footage of just like random apartment windows. Like it's just like sort of rolling through L.A.
Right through. This
wow. Just through neighborhoods.
Yeah, dude, it's wings coming within 2 or 3 feet of trees and very. Oh, look, in fact, yeah,
they had
they're
to maneuver it around
over a house to avoid a tree. Wow.
That's insane. I mean,
oh, they have a little, yeah, a little
cherry picker to
cherry
chop
picker
down
to
stuff,
chop stuff
yeah.
down. Yeah. Wow.
So I'm going to put that as not a problem of moving that from, you know, SpaceX factory to the port is doable since we've done it with the space shuttle. We've done it with the booster. We didn't have to move any bridges, maybe had to move some electrical cables. And you're going to be like, oh, like, is L.A. going to want to do that? I don't know. L.A. has, you know, the 6,000-person rocket facility that says, hey, we could keep work here if you could maybe help us once or twice a year at night move a rocket from our factory to the port.
Yeah,
you know,
no.
Oh, sorry, we got a Michael Bay movie we're shutting down the Highway 4. We can't do this.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. L.A. is very good at shutting things down for commercial purposes.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I don't quite know. Yeah, I agree with you, and not to further dogpile on the internet straw man, but I'm with you. It doesn't seem like it's something that is physically impossible.
A comment was made doable but not practical. Well, we did it. We did it twice to put something in a museum to bring a rocket that's going to be our next moon capable or Mars capable rocket. And remember, we move the Falcon 9 cylinders cross country all the time. That happens all the time. So from a scale point, is moving a house practical? We do it all the time. Is moving massive construction equipment wider than one lane practical? We do it all the time. So on a scale of rockets, I'd say it's highly practical.
Well,
very,
sure.
Very.
I think there's what is now and what would be later, right? And if they had to disassemble light poles and do stuff like that, but this became something that was more of an industry to Los Angeles, then you would make adjustments for it. You know, that's what the city of Los Angeles does.
Or possibly even, you know, do some factor that into your reconditioning of existing roads or whatever, where it's like we need some way to get gigantic space shuttle sized objects in and out of our city.
And there's a lot of like private public partnerships for stuff like that, where if it's like, hey, look, if you're going to use this route, then help us refurb this to not have light poles here and put all of them underground or something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, Musk has already got a pretty good relationship with the city of Los Angeles and whatnot. I mean, he's already
can we talk about that
cryptic tweet?
Yeah, can we talk about the other Elon Musk tweet? Because everybody assumed that we were talking about the other BSI Elon Musk tweet, which is
I actually don't know the other one. I don't think
casually mega cash. You know, like you would imagine, just you know, as he's finishing breakfast, or you know, just go ahead and tweets out that he has verbal government approval
commitment or yeah
to do a hyperloop between Baltimore, DC, New York, and Philadelphia, DC to New York, which would be the two northern and southern endpoints, in 29 minutes.
And city center into city center.
Wait, no, wait, an underground hyperloop.
Yeah.
Okay. This seems like, I don't know. It sounds to me, if it were anyone else, I would assume that at a party, somebody described a vision and some senator halfway in between mojitos says, yeah, that sounds great. And then now it's like verbal approval. Let's do it.
So he followed up and said that verbal approval was on the federal level. Still a lot of work before formal written approval, but this opens the door now for state and city discussions. But this is a bit of the sell job of, hey, look, we've got momentum. Wouldn't your cities be excited if they were effectively one city? You know,
so this came out, and so, you know, transportation press, every people cover this sort of stuff, and sort of the oh, what now Elon Musk, you know, blogger crowd started calling around to different like cities and stuff, mm-hmm. and saying like, have you heard, you know, New York transportation, have you heard about this? No. Anybody else? Nope. And like, we can't find anybody who says they've heard about
sure.
this. Like, well, It's like, well, he did say federal level, guys. So if you're calling the city, that's your first civics class mistake. And if I were to think federal level, whose ear does he have?
Well, yeah. and also at the federal level, like, let's say somebody flat out said, I absolutely personally promise you we will make this happen. Like that's the level of commitment he got. That person is not going to make sure he gets into the office and says, hey, just in case any press call, make sure everybody knows that I verbally committed to this thing.
Well, I mean, beyond that, to me, that's
we got confirmation from where it came from, though, Brian.
Oh, yes.
What branch of the federal government?
Federal.
The White House?
The White House.
Oh, we did get confirmation from whom?
Came from the White House.
Okay.
Yeah, because he's on Trump's council. So
yeah. Like,
well, they was.
Asked if it had given Musk a verbal approval, a White House spokesman said, quote, we have a promising conversations to date, are committed to transformative infrastructure projects, and believe our greatest solutions have often come from the ingenuity and drive of the private sector.
Remember that this is also around the time that they are trying to push a massive infrastructure bill. Obviously, without getting too far into the weeds about, you know, congressional politics, there's a bit of a logjam right now. But one of the things that has been promised from the very, very beginning of the Trump administration was a huge infrastructure bill. One might imagine that he has a part of that. To me, the smarter way to report a story like that, though, from the state and city level, is you call the state senators that are going to wind up voting on this kind of stuff, and you ask them whether or not they would be for or against. Because of course, it's not, if this plan had hit any state house, you think any state senator would hold a plan like this back and not leak it to whatever reporter?
Not tell everybody?
Yeah,
sure.
No, of course this is not just out there on, you know, the desk of random PDOT employees or New York Department of Transportation. But I'll tell you what, it's a fascinating idea.
Yeah, I've been personally very skeptical of Hyperloop, not because of the technology, but because it's the legislative. It's everything else that goes around with it. Is that these things are really neat ideas, but trying to get anything done in this day and age is very, very problematic. And, you know, the things succeed or fail based upon their opportunities for graft. You know, we've had this California high-speed rail thing is, you know, sputtered along, but it doesn't die completely because so many opportunities for people to make money off of, you know, bonds and federal loans and other stuff. That's, you know, a frightening reason for me personally to think that something would get funded.
So you give this 0 to 100. What percentage chance do you think we see any kind of construction on this within the next 10 years?
So if I wanted to make sure this thing happened, if I was, you know, White House senator or whatever, and I wanted to see this happen, and I was trying to solve part of the problem of infrastructure spending, is it always gets catastrophically goes out of budget because there's, you know, it gets into the incentivized, is that, you know, if you're not going to have to pay the bill for 20 years, then why bother keeping costs down? Which is why we are heading towards this horrifying financial cliff, you know, on municipal, state, and federal levels because of our pension obligations and other stuff. And just, you know, California is facing a $1 trillion deficit because they decided to peg payouts on the stock market at its high because people thought that was a great idea. So if it was tied directly into federal funding, saying that you want to get these funds in these certain corridors, you have to build a actual high speed system, and we will make funds available to do that. And that'll open up funds for other things. It just comes down to saying, build this, we'll pay for other stuff. You look at the problem you have, like, between, you know, New York and San Francisco, their subway systems are falling apart, and for a multitude of reasons. And for them to think about, we want to build a Hyperloop or whatever, is insane to them, because they're like, we're having trouble trying to solve these problems. And I would argue, like, because you're the problem.
So just so we know,
you know,
0 to 100. 0 to 100. I'll come in at 9%. There's a
9% chance.
Even that's charitable. I will give it a 5%. 5% chance of this happening within 10 years. Because the flaw is not the technology. The flaw is not the cost. The flaw, all of that. I believe all of that can be solved. The flaw, if you're saying, will everybody in all of the states between D.C. and New York agree to allow a company to burrow underneath them. Not in the next 10 years. It's not going to happen.
So that would
not
be
gonna happen.
DC, Maryland, Philadelphia, and New York State.
Yeah. In New Jersey.
In Jersey.
And I assume Rhode Island, probably to some degree. I don't know.
No, Rhode Island might be, I don't know. I haven't looked at a map. Andrew, 0 to 100.
Well, to Brian's point, I would say that I see it happening if there's enough payout for the states. If the states are like, oh, we will get X money from this thing happening if this thing happens. And that's the way it functions. It's politics works weird when you go from the state to the federal level. Your state, you want your governor and your senators to be good about spending money and be wise about it. But when they go to the federal level, their goal is to bring as much federal funding locally as you can. You don't really care about the other guy having to foot the bill. It's human nature. It's not one political party or other. It's just the way we are. I'm going to peg, my odds at Brian's odds, the same thing, unless somebody comes up with, I would make the argument, kind of my argument that I would do about like football arenas and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. If these things can't function privately, then we shouldn't be using public money for doing this.
Yeah.
And if somebody can come up with a really good private model to say we can do this, and there have been, historically private toll roads. Actually, I had a friend whose, family, they had one for years, and up until like 20 years ago, it was a privately held toll road in like Virginia, went through part of there. I would say that if somebody can come up with a really good private model to fund it, that then would benefit the states and say, okay, this is what we got to do. The technology is, people aren't going to detect us drilling underneath there. We can do it for X amount of cost. We're going to provide this benefit, and we're going to pay you X percent per every car that travels through your state. Maybe. I'll give it a 20% chance.
Oh, up from 9.
Wow. I downgraded mine to 5. So that's 4 times bigger.
4 times as much. I'm gonna split the diff at 14 and a half.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, I agree with everything. I mean, really, at this point, here's all we know is that Elon Musk is committed to selling this because he is using his platforms to do it. And he is in a unique position, as he is already launching rockets, to say, I'm not just a guy. I'm not just a company. I'm the man who makes these things happen. I started burrowing under my own property because I wanted this to move forward. I'm deeply committed to you not sitting in traffic and wherever that goes. So
that's what this felt like to me. Like, there are times both Andrew and I are pretty active, all three of us active on Twitter. There are times I feel like I got to put something out just to be putting stuff out. That's what this felt like to me.
I mean,
this
is
had
a bigger
conversation
thing,
about a thing.
I mean, like, getting it, this does not happen because a bunch of reasonable people sit around a table, like a project like this.
Right.
This happens because the will of the people is there, the will of the governments are there, and there's enough money there. And you need all three to get something like that done, because there are a million ways that this can explode. So it seems like he's motivated for it, and I think that needs to happen if it has any chance at all, because this is not just a white paper that gets pushed through state houses. Like, it's too ambitious.
Yeah, as mentioned in the comments, if it gets tied into the whole massive infrastructure spending thing, then the chances go up considerably. And that's the unfortunate side. You often hear the argument like, why don't we just do blank or blank? And it's one of these things where I'm all for blank or blank if the cost is minimal to the people who aren't all for this, And that's the problem, is that we often embark upon these things that are actually, the costs are very heavy down the road. And people say, oh, we should do blank. Space funding. We talked about that before. Like, I don't have a problem if we want to increase NASA's budget. I would just like to see a much greater accountability for it, because many of the people saying we should increase it, you start asking them what the budget is, what it's being spent for right now, what were some of the mistakes in the past, and you just get blank stares. And it's like, okay, you want a thing, but you know what the thing you want is, and you don't know what the problem is. And because we're getting emotional arguments from this, you know, you go to the science museum and they have this like, put a token in here if you think NASA should have an increase in budget, you know, and everybody puts tokens in there because like the tokens don't cost you anything. You just put the token in there. And you just ask people like, well, should we give the same percentage of our budget that the Europeans do on their space program? And you know, people are like, oh, yeah, yeah, that sounds good. It's like, wait, think about the European space program. Oh, yeah, no, yeah, we have the most funded space program in the world. And not to say that more money tour wouldn't be a bad idea, but it's how we spend it. Same with infrastructure. Like, I'm not into, like, these arenas where we spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, now $1 billion to build, you know, football stadiums.
Historically a fairly dicey economic proposition.
Yes.
Yeah, the economics, it's bad. It just doesn't, and it's like, nothing against football, but it's like, it's a business. It's a business owned by billionaires. Like, let them pay for their GD stadium.
It's a business owned by billionaires that effectively runs 8 shows a year, which, you know, if you've looked at some of the best privately run stadiums, like the one they have in San Francisco, are, you know, they're baseball stadiums, which are smaller, can hold concerts and run. So I'm going to get crushed for not remembering how many home games, but 80 something games a year.
Right.
Where you're just using it more. Like it's there. For if you don't have a major pro team and a major college team, then you're effectively building a boondoggle for billionaires.
Right. Whereas the multipurpose stadiums make everybody unhappy. It's too far away for the baseball players and not great for the
football players. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, to be fair, with as many of the dicey propositions that San Francisco, my new home of the Bay Area, loves to give away money for literally everything. The one thing that they have been very, very stringent on is stadium money, and they've forced, you know, both the Giants and now the Warriors to build privately funded stadiums, and it's the reason why the Raiders are going to Las Vegas, because Las Vegas would pay them money and Oakland wouldn't. So
right.
Tell you what, speaking of giving people money, everybody who enjoys this kind of conversation should head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Go on.
Well, Brian, I'm glad that you prompted me, because this is the best way that you can not only support this show by giving literally whatever money you could ask for or have available. Just kick it in. We're having a great time here, and we love bringing this to you every single week, and it's because you guys continue to support us.
Heck yeah. Weird Things, patreon.com/weirdthings.
Plus, you get early access to After Things, our sister show about creativity and being a professional, and you get that in an RSS feed, so you get access to it a couple day or two before anybody else.
And at no point are we at risk of harming individual lives. You hear that, Patreon? We're very safe.
Jeez. Yeah, okay. Very topical.
Yeah.
Very timely.
We're on the up and up.
So speaking of funding and topical, one of the things that happened this week was they'd asked more SpaceX stuff. SpaceX had announced a while ago they were going to do what's called the Red Dragon program, which is the idea is to take their Dragon space capsule and send it to Mars, put one on Mars. And Musk got approached, said, hey, what's the status of that? He says, we're no longer looking to do that. And people are like, the dream is dead. It's dead. Musk is like, we think we found some. He did a whole interview, by the way. There was an interview he did with
and that guy was there the whole time. The guy was just like, dream's dead.
Dude, if you follow the SpaceX thread on Reddit, pretty much exactly that.
Just a guy in the background.
And Musk is like, we think we found a much better way, a much more practical way to land things on Mars, and that's our plan going forward. And he retweeted a thing from Tesla Roddy. SpaceX, and this is a Musk retweeted, it was an article, SpaceX skipping Red Dragon for, quote, this is Elon Musk, quote, vastly bigger ships. So what this seems to imply is instead of they had this plan like, oh, we're going to send, you know, every Martian cycle every 2 years, we're going to be sending a SpaceX thing on a regular delivery. Sounds like they're saying, you know what, let's just go ahead and build the bigger, better rocket system to go do that.
Hmm. So.
And he says, bigger ships. And remember, he's talked about people like the ISS, it's huge. And Elon Musk, like, and we envision bigger ones than that.
Yeah, so. I don't know. That's that seems like a good way to curry favor with your base while not having to show anything tangible.
Brian says Elon Musk no longer wants to go to Mars.
That's no. I'm just saying.
I don't know, man. I just heard you say that Elon Musk doesn't want to go to Mars. You better get talking.
A reliable source just said that you said
that,
Brian.
Yeah, you said that. So,
person familiar with the matter. I don't know. That's a bummer. I'm in general a much bigger fan of the tangible versus the promise. And great, you replacing a promise with a bigger promise. That's fine. Not as big a fan of that as if replacing a promise with even a scaled down tangible version of what was promised.
Well, I think what's interesting is that we're seeing that go both ways, right? So now he's like, okay, we're going to be building a smaller ITS because we can do it more tangibly and we can do it faster. And when we go to Mars, we're going to not do it with the Falcon, or sorry, with the Dragon capsule. We're going to do it with an as yet unnamed larger thing.
Let me put it this way. In an alternate reality, not this reality, I certainly wouldn't say in this reality, but in an alternate reality, there exists a Elon Musk who doesn't fulfill his dreams, or our dreams, and doesn't follow up on his promises. In that alternate reality, again, not this reality, but in that alternate reality...
It's starting to sound like that thing.
Canceling my Patreon subscription now.
A smart tactic would be to keep people excited with bigger promises rather than tangible
deliverables.
I'm going
to propose an alternate to your alternate reality. My alternate reality is that you get this very, very ambitious dreamer that sits around with some of those brilliant space engineers you can imagine, rocket scientists, if you will. And they're like, you know, maybe we could do this. He says, this sounds great. Runs out. Hey, guys, maybe we're thinking about doing this. And he says, maybe. And it becomes Elon Musk announces this. And then he goes back into the room and they're like, Elon, we're still working out the math on that. And he's like, oh, okay. And then they're like, all right, well, let's come up with a proposal. He says, we need something. Comes up the proposal. And then meanwhile, they learn a lot. They develop a lot. And then they say, hey, this is the thing we want to do. And they start looking into it and they realize, you know, it might make more sense if we do this. And I think that what's happened is I think the engineering has evolved considerably. And I think that he wants a shorter timeline to make these things happen, not a longer timeline. But that is based upon the engineering we have and the money we have and the available resources. And the more you get into it, you find out, well, this might be more expensive, but this will be more practical. I look at it as encouraging news. Because I think the reality of us getting that interplanetary transport system is going to happen sooner, not later. I think getting that thing on Mars is going to be sooner than what we were expecting. Because I think what's happening is that there is a reality there, but also nobody has spent this much money and time trying to solve these specific problems. NASA's and their contractors have tried to solve it in certain ways. SpaceX says, step one, we need reusability. That's step two. It's got to be methane. Step one and two, if it's not reusable, it's not methane based, it's no go on this. And then extending out from there. And as they've learned now, like they've have experience, the only private company ever to return a space capsule from orbit, the one of only like three nations to do that sort of thing. And what they've learned on heat shielding, it's the heat shielding underneath the Falcon, or excuse me, the Dragon, is way advanced than anything anybody else is using. It's the most advanced heat shield there is. They know more about heat shields probably than anybody now. So I think that engineering knowledge has increased, and I think that they're trying to assess and say what's the most practical way forward, and that Brian Brushwood doesn't know what he's talking about, so just shut up.
I mean, I wouldn't accuse anything like that. I think I'm very sympathetic to people who – feel like this sounds like a downscaling or a delay and I don't know, not calling it that. I think I would prefer not hiding behind. If you have to explain how it's even better that this timeline isn't being met, the original timeline isn't being met, then that just instantly makes me feel squirrely. I don't like it. And I prefer
in general, I think that I can agree. There's an element of like, all right, wake me up when we have like momentum on this, and we're like, it's interesting to follow the planning phase, but it is less interesting than this is being worked on. We are now targeting this realistic window.
Sure.
You know, sure.
So we got last year, we were waiting to find out what the announcement was going to be for the next generation rocket. And then we got that the September announcement and then the wonderful questions afterwards. And Elon Musk says perhaps he'll have prepared questions this time.
yeah.
So we had this that, and that was, you know, almost a year ago, we got that ITS announcement. Since then, we know they tested one of their large carbon fiber tanks and it blew up. We know that they've been spending money and doing development towards that, but we also know the Falcon 9 has had a really good track record so far this year. They're looking to do the Falcon Heavy launch later this year, which Elon Musk is very realistic on its chances of success. We'll get in 2 months, we'll get this idea of what the ITS, the current iteration that's going to be, and I think we're going to get an idea of what the cost will be, and I think we're going to get a program that Elon Musk is going to personally make sure that the first one's like, hey, NASA, somebody wants to spend. Remember, the first one happened, you know, the first announcement was before the elections, before everything, you know, and it's like, hey, this is a thing we want to go do, and let's see what happens. And the reaction's been, you know, mixed, and I think now we're going to get a proposal that a mere 15 billionaire could afford if he has to. I think he just wants to make sure it happens. There's a history in space of, like, you know, there's a book called The Visionaries, which talks about, like, Gerard O'Neill, the guy that imagined the big cylinders. And I read these articles like, oh, what if we hadn't stopped going to the moon and we kept going? What would have happened? And I'd be like, we would be bankrupt. We'd be in debt. We'd be living in Mad Max world if we kept funding it, because it was not a renewable, reusable technology. And that was the problem, is people just missed that. We don't here, and our listeners don't, but people outside miss that step that – when it cost you, you know, the Apollo program cost $1 billion an astronaut, $1 billion an astronaut to send them to the moon.
Is that 1960s dollars or?
Like an adjusted, but pretty close to, like, even in those dollars. I mean, it was, and so what's, and that cost wasn't going to go down that much. And so you have to solve these other problems that people don't realize. It's, you think about, like, you know, when, you know, Justin sits down to do a 1 hour one man mic show, or Brian, or make a card game, or Brian, when you want to put out a product on scam school, scam stuff, you know, people just see, the thing, it just exists. How hard is that?
Right. And, well, and of course what you don't see are all the failed attempts and the amount of investment that goes into it. You know, what people, and again, everybody here understands this, but I wish the outside world understood what a strange artifact the space race was. It was a straight up military pissing contest. It was, we could spend all this money on blowing up humans, or we could spend the exact same amount and just have a race to the moon.
Blowing up humans.
Instead of blowing up humans, we're blowing humans up.
Yeah. You know, it's, why don't we go to Disney every weekend? It's so inspiring and fun.
Yeah,
and
everybody just has imagine a good time. How inspired we'll be if we just win every
great,
week.
You know,
I've tried. So to your point, Brian, I think that it's the danger is it's a person. Musk is somebody who wants to talk about the exciting things they're doing, but he also. These things change. The realities have changed. The economics of it change. But, you know, we're not. But remember, we weren't getting the putting the Red Dragon on Mars. Again, we don't know what he's going to say in September. We have no idea what he's going to say. But we're still, there's a planned mission next year. Next year, folks. Next year to loop two people around the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, ultimately, that is going to. That's going to be a big step, and we're going to see more going forward. But I don't know. And then a lot of this is also just us kind of making sweeping generalizations about the fact that Elon Musk likes to answer questions on Twitter and to reporters.
Yeah. Right? No. And truthfully, I'd like to think we're a little more grounded in reality, that we're not prone to flights of fancy, you know, where we just make it up as we go along.
Not at all, Brian. It's not at all a hallmark or something we'd ever be known for.
No. No, yeah, not at all.
Nothing.
So what's next?
Bryce, do you have some video for us? Because I'll tell you what's next.
Previously on
Johnny Quest!
Ugg is basically kind of like Polo with the dinosaurs.
Like, he is the one. He is the chosen one.
Slow rotation of your hips. Just swivel your hips.
All right, so are you ready?
Get on my back, Brian.
Yeah! Now. Surely you have a plan, right?
Oh, I have a plan, Brian. I have a plan.
Hot damn, man. In what is easily my all-time favorite episode of Journey Quest, I seduced a T-Rex, and I put my hand on her purring place and made her happy. I hopped on the little saddle on the back, and I'm driving a dang T-Rex to escape from the middle of a game of Ugg so I can go rescue my friend who's out there trapped in the wilderness with slow molesting sloths and raping spiders. Also, I have a chainsaw on my right hand.
So, meanwhile, Justin,
yeah,
was what were you doing? You were fleeing the. Did you go into the cave?
I was. I'm in the cave, and the door has closed, and now the sloth bro is not responding to me, as I assume. His
intentions are to continue to slowly molest you.
Well, he's not yet begun, but I'm going to begin my action by running toward where the door is at full speed and looking to
hold on, Justin.
God damn it!
Where are you going? That stage door's locked anyway.
I look. I try to find where the voice is coming from, and I start spin kicking in that direction. And I just say, "Turn on the light, you creep."
Hang on, bro.
Spin kick, spin kick, spin kick.
You start hearing Dave Matthews Band playing at half speed on the record player. Bum, bum, bum.
I definitely go to where the Dave Matthews is coming from, and I spin kick that, ending the Dave Matthews.
Whoa, it's a party.
Turn
now.
On the lights, you creep.
Come on, man.
I try to go to the door and I try to spin kick it. What happens, Andrew?
It's rock. It's just, it's not moving.
You see the sparks of two rocks lighting a candle in a corner, and then it gets lit, and then you see a slow figure walking away to light another candle.
I mean, all right. Like, that's at least
you
like
see some massage oils.
Okay, I look for another. So there's no way to get out. I'm
might
totally
go
sealed
deeper
in.
Into the cave.
What?
Might be able to go deeper.
All right. Again, I just wanted. I mean, if I might make a meta protest.
Hey, man, you could do anything. Come on, let's wrestle.
Can I see the sloth? Now with the candle lights,
you see an outline of the sloth.
I spin kick it.
Remember, he's a giant sloth. He's yeah. A giant.
Oh, that tickles!
Oh my god!
Oh, you!
I move away. I yeah. move away from the slow grasp.
Slow grasp just grabs air.
All right.
Let's just
I run futilely into the rock door over and over and over again, not trusting the fact that it is totally solid.
Some Genesis golf.
You
any
trip.
Gestures.
Oh no.
And
I
there's
tripped.
A bunch of magazines on the ground.
What are the magazines?
Wii magazines.
Oh god.
FHM
wrapped around 1950s wrestling and bodybuilding magazines.
Oh my god. All right, so I look around the cave. I can't get out the way I came, but
you know what? I was wrong. I don't have Genesis Golf. This is just Altered Beast, and you hear "Rise from your grave," and it's like, got another controller.
I spin kick the controller.
He starts laughing. Ha ha, that's great. Here, let me do it too. He lifts a leg and moves it towards the controller. It gets closer, agonizingly close, and finally connects with the controller, barely moving it off the couch
okay.
and onto the floor.
What are my movement options, my escape options, Andrew?
You might be able to go further back into the cave. There might be more back there.
More good times back there.
What's back there, Sloth?
Your future.
Okay.
Come with me. And he puts his arm around your
I
neck.
Avoid the arm. I spin kick his hand.
Oh, man. That tickles.
So you say I have no options, just so we're clear. I have now tried
desperately. The cave might go on and on. The cave might go deeper. There might be more back there.
Just so we are clear that I am not, like, I am not making this choice.
This game's too fast.
You have a lot of choices. You could play video games with the sloth, you know? You could keep playing this, you know, this koi, although you seem to be leading the sloth on, to be honest with you.
I'm going to
explore the cave further. Maybe there's more back there.
All right. I said, yeah, no, make some pizza rolls. In fact, I need 400 pizza rolls.
Oh, I only have 5.
Well, make all 5 of them, but cook them 500. That's
pizza
fine.
Rolls.
Make all 500, please.
That'll be most of my pizza rolls.
Please cook all the pizza rolls.
Now?
Right now.
Okay.
The sloth begins to move to cook the pizza rolls, and I descend into the cave further.
It's all right. It's going through a dark passage, and you look.
Oh, I grab one of the candles. I grab one of the candles, so I have light.
Grab one of the candles. You could grab one of the Wii magazines too, and make a torch.
Sure, I grab one of the Wii magazines and I light the Wii magazine, as well as the 1992 April edition of Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Well, actually, it was like 1954 Physical Culture.
Okay, sure. You all right, sloth?
Hey, my tales of manliness.
Hey, pizza rolls.
Come back, Justin.
I'll be right back. I just need to get ready for pizza rolls.
But down that path lays only.
So as you walk further down in the cavern,
adventure!
You come across some carved steps.
Okay, wait. I walk across what?
There's some carved steps that seem to descend lower.
All right, I'm walking through the carved steps.
And you walk down to the end of the carved steps, you smell water.
Okay.
And there's a dock, and there's a little boat there and a paddle.
All right.
You just stare at it.
I inspect the boat for seaworthiness.
It looks pretty, it's a little old, but it looks like it might last you.
So just a rowboat?
And you hear at the top of the stairs, Justin, I microwaved the pizza rolls. They're ready.
All 500?
Yeah. Then he flips I'm looking for a light switch. He's trying to find a light switch.
Wait, he has electricity?
Whether he has one or not, he thinks he does.
I say,
he has a microwave. Wait, you're not amazed that he has a microwave, but you are amazed that he has lights?
No, I thought it was hand in hand, but sure.
Okay, sure. Or pizza rolls or a Genesis.
Yeah. I say, oh, crap, wait, you microwaved them? I can't eat that. I need them cooked with one by one on the flame.
Oh, ooh, that would be unsafe.
So bye. I get in the boat and I start paddling away.
Right? And you see a sign, and you see it's hard to see because it's like almost dimly lit, but you still got your Wii magazine that's on fire, and you hold it up close to the sign, and there's carved into the sign, and as you're about to read it, you hear the sloth yell, "Oh no, don't go there. That's the cave of self-loathing."
Well, all right.
Yeah, sounds like I'm home.
Sounds like is the role I was born to play.
The next sign says, "Beware, further you go into here, the worse it gets."
One thing I've learned in this game is the only way to play is to get worse. So I am undeterred. I do not want to get raped by that sloth.
Only molested.
The boat comes to a stop. You get off, and then in front of you there are 10 different passageways. 10 different passageways, but there's something very peculiar about them. It's almost like they're shimmering. They're shimmering. And a voice tells you,
"Through each passageway leads to a memory of self-loathing."
which one do you take?
It's like a Disney voiceover.
It actually, strangely, it is. It's like the Disney announcer.
In fact, Dame Judi Dench is narrating it.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Dame Judi Dench. Welcome to the Cave of Self-Loathing, presented by Visa.
Since the dawn of time, humanity has regretted the dawn of time.
All right, I go to the furthest left.
Oh.
You go to the furthest left.
Yeah.
And what you find there is you step into there, it gets sort of cloudy. It's like this green smoke. And you feel a little bit woozy, okay? And you're still trying to stay awake, trying to stay alert. Then all of a sudden things become a little bit clearer and you hear a voice come from overhead. It says, "Welcome to the cave of self-loathing. Well, you have made a choice here."
It says, "Today is the day you met Brian Brushwood, brought to you by Siemens. Thanks to an amazing future, in the year 2008, you will meet Brian Brushwood. The two of you will do something called the BB Live Show, and everything will be great. ... Or will it?"
Yeah, man, old news. I keep on keep
it repeats
on
the message. The year is 2008. It keeps on going. You paddle through?
Yeah, paddle okay. through.
Okay. Man, am I just going to chronicle your whole podcasting career? let's just assume it keeps going. Describing everything.
All right, do I reach the end?
Like, but mainly with like a weird emphasis on your podcasting relationship with Brian Brushwood. It keeps going back to every moment that like you didn't back Brian's play,
sure,
or you didn't support him, or you second guessed him, or the time you laughed when he lost his hand.
He deserved all that. Yeah. I feel literally no regret. I keep paddling. Like, I'm not even breaking stride. Like, I'm not even waiting for it to get to the end of the narration. Like, I'm just moving along.
Okay. At some point, you start hearing it's clearly not the pre-recorded message, but instead you hear like a technician saying, please stop going so fast. Please,
wait, am I disrupting the flow of the Caves of Self-Loathing ride? Yeah. Who are you?
I'm Ted.
Hi, Ted.
Listen, it'd be real helpful if you listen to the whole thing. We're almost to the part where Brian, like, gives you $20 and you never paid it back.
Okay, can we just, like, do me a favor, man? Just, I'm either going to be... Just like a crew style, trying to burn through this as fast as possible, or you can just go ahead and give me the TLDR on this cave.
I'm not really supposed to let people.
Ted, come on, Ted. You're breaking my balls, Ted. Come on.
Do you have $20?
Sure.
I got
it from Brian Brushwood.
You never paid him back.
I never paid him back.
See, that's how terrible you are.
Now, as you're talking, yelling at the narrator overhead, you notice. Off on the, there's sort of a walkway along the line of the cavern. You notice some people off to the side, kind of dressed in rags, kind of like when you walked into the village, running along, running away from somewhere.
I say,
and
hey.
Overhead, you hear this. Sounds like a crowd noise or whatever.
Oh, I go toward the crowd noise.
I think it's
above you. It's above you.
It's above
you.
Okay.
You hear the echoes.
And you hear thump, 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 thump. And you look to where the people were running from, and you see what looks like an explosive device attached to a column.
Okay.
Sir, are you still there? Are you still there?
Yeah, hey, Ted. I think I'm watching a terrorist attack in progress.
Okay, look, only one of us is allowed to improvise, sir, and I'm afraid it's not you. Only me. I'm the one in charge.
I literally, hey, Ted, for real?
When I took this job, I was told that I would have control over one thing.
So I just saw somebody plant an explosive device in your cave. And,
are you ready for some UGG?
I think that there is a game called UGG that I escaped from happening above your ride.
Look,
and
man,
somebody...
it's bad enough that they had to work on UGG Day, but now you're going to rub it in my face. I don't get paid enough for this. I know that I'm missing UGG.
Ted.
Everybody's talking about it.
Wait, what happens if I start drowning?
Do you
have to come down here and save me?
I mean, we have safeguards in place.
I jump off the boat, and I'm like, I can't swim!
It's 2 feet of water.
Yeah. Ted points out that there's 2 feet of water.
I lay down. I can't swim.
They're like, all right, sir, I'm going to have to increase the water flow and just usher you off. So Ted cranks up the water flow.
Ted, you need to get down. Fill the cave. Fill the cave with water so it can wash away this explosive device.
Will you get back in the boat then?
Sure, yes.
Okay, all right.
We need to get this explosive device.
I'm going to start filling it up. Let me see. I need to see you getting into that boat.
I get into the boat.
Okay, all right. And then cranks up and then just sort of stops at around 4 feet.
Ted?
Yeah?
We're both going to die if you don't get this goddamn explosive device.
Okay, look,
out
I don't
here.
Need your threats. Everybody, okay. It's a no. day.
Do you want... I get out of the boat and I go toward the explosive device that the people were running away from.
Hey, where are you going, Justin?
I'm trying to get this. You are an incompetent POS, Ted. You have no idea how much you're going to hear to your manager about
hey,
the fact that you.
Listen, man, look, it's bad enough I miss an UGG day. I don't want to get it written up as well. This is bad news.
Get down here right now.
Okay,
let
me check with my supervisor. And then Ted clicks off as Brian asks Andrew what happens next.
Supervisor, what's the problem?
Right, got a guy claiming.
Security class is the best thing ever. We now swing to a middle management disagreement at an amusement park.
Listen, I got this guy. He went to he's halfway through the Cave of Regrets or Self-Loathing, and then he keeps claiming that there's a bomb there. We don't have a bomb simulation. We ran this on Thursday, and at no point in his entire we ran the background check.
Let me get the manual.
Okay. All
right. Meanwhile, I'm continuing to walk toward the explosive device just to check it out.
And also, as long as we're chatting, I don't think it's UGG day. Of all the days, we can't shut down for it's not like there's anybody going to be here except for this outsider.
I don't write the rules, all right? I understand that. I don't want to be here for UGG day. You don't want to be here for UGG day. And frankly, I'd ask to not have your shift. Okay. But we don't get what we want, all right?
All right, fine. Look, what are we going to do? He's almost up to this bomb. Oh, you know what? Now
well,
I look
you
at
haven't
it.
Spoken to him. That's the key thing, right? Because we got to maintain the illusion of what's going on here, right?
I mean...
never speak to guests. Okay.
Sure.
Bomb threat. Okay, bomb threat. Got it right here.
Okay, well, it's less of a threat. I'm actually, he did have a point. I'm looking at the bomb right now on security camera 5. If you take a look right over there, that's definitely it's got the buttons and the wires and the dynamite.
Let me punch it up. All right. Okay. Yeah. It looks different than what we had in inventory.
Well, yeah, I suspect it's not from inventory. I didn't think I'd be saying this, but I think Justin might be onto something on this one. Listen,
who's Justin again?
Kirk, customer 275-1D.
Hold on, let me type this in.
I continue to make my way to the bomb.
He should be right now making sweet love with a sloth.
Yeah, I agree. I'm doing my best to get... let me just give him a little... I'm going to go down there and give him a little push. Just kind of move him on down the road. Sound good?
Yeah, get him back into the sloth, because we have a whole other thing planned for him next.
Okay, great. Ted walks downstairs, comes in, and...
I spin kick him!
Wait. Hey, come back here, employee 24521.
Unconscious Ted lays there, motionless.
Yeah. Oh, employee 25241?
Yes, it's me, employee 25441.
Not the one I asked for, but that's fine. Whoever's closest.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, I have a note here. We're not supposed to directly engage with the guest. The guest is on track here for like a full, complete simulation.
When is he set to exit?
It's open ended here, so it's either like death or run out of money or whenever he decides to end it.
I don't know. He seems, I'm taking a look at him now. I'm back in my office.
Hey, Justin, are you down here?
I'm looking at it right now. It seems as if he's, pretty agitated to leave. If he wanted to get out immediately, what would be the protocol on that?
Justin!
Oh, well, I mean, like if they like, they'd have to say the safe word.
Sure, yeah.
Just in case. Burning Wii magazine. mean?
Just in case I'm doubled up on it. Hey, one employee to another. I don't always keep up on the safe word. What is that customer's safe word?
Actually, it's a safe phrase. Uh-huh. Let me check this out here, just because.
Yeah, if you could just punch that up for me.
Justin,
hold on. Let me just punch this up.
Smoking weed. That's not what they mean.
Actually, it's a safe phrase that has to be said in a certain way. It has to be yelled. It's I want. Some. Sweet. Sloth love.
Justin, how are you feeling, buddy? I'm almost caught up to you now.
I grab the bomb and I throw it in the water and then I scream at the top of my lungs. You're talking to the customer. I want some sweet sloth love. I want some sweet sloth love.
I knew it.
All right. Take me a couple minutes here. I'm going to drain the water, which, of course, if there's anything in pursuit of you, it'll make it easier for them to catch up with you. And once I've drained the water, I'll be able to open up the security door.
Hard to get and give you that sweet sloth love through all this water.
And that voice is getting louder. It's getting a lot louder.
Where is the exit for, or where's the security door for when you, where you
Well,
release?
It's in front of you, but I got to open it. There's procedures
okay,
I got to follow.
Go, do it.
I see you, buddy. Okay. I see you.
Dude, you're going to get
down
spin
in
kicked.
12 minutes with a survey I need you to fill out before
Come
you can
here.
Hear Park
big
exit.
Guy.
Yeah, it's fine. Fine. Where? I'll fill out the survey. Where is it?
Well, I'm going to come to you. I've
Bring
got
a trench gun for this sloth.
It's like Dave Matthews always says.
It's don't wear sloth genitalia. It's very, very small.
Shut up.
Come now, here. All of a sudden, in front of you, the door starts to open, starts to raise up 1 inch. 2 inch, 3 inches.
Hey, inch, buddy.
I begin to crawl on all fours, taking the gamble that putting my butt toward the sloth will allow me to get out of
and
the door as fast
the
as door possible.
Door stops.
Oh no!
Let me grab those ankles. Come here, you.
Next no. time on Journey Quest.
No. No! I don't have the leverage to spin kick.
Your one weakness.
Gentlemen, do you have time for let's do some picks?
Yeah, man. You know what? I'm going to double down on something we talked about before. We watched more episodes yesterday, but I'm going to say Preacher, Preacher, Preacher. It's the creature feature of the Preacher. It's way, way good.
It really is a great genre show that is consistently buoyed by the fact that the acting punches above its weight. I think that there's a version of this show that is plotted and even probably shot the way it is, which is really, really good. It very much is a great companion to Legion, where Legion is very adventurous, but is far more sci-fi. This is far more suspense horror.
Grindhousey.
And Grindhousey. Just that cast. So fun, so engaging. And
especially being ignorant of where it goes in the comic books, the triangle, the love triangle that they're crafting and beginning to explore. I assume there's going to be a constant ebb and flow of power and desire between the three main principals. Spoiler alert, just watching a dude chilling out with Adolf Hitler. Pretty funny stuff. It's amazing.
It's one of those shows that seems to consistently ask itself, how could this be the best version of this scene, even if it's insane?
Right.
Right.
Well, and they use those visual cues that set your brain to, they take advantage of associations that you don't even know that you have. For example, you know, when they're driving, depending on whether it's the mood of the conversation being had, like they will intentionally poorly key the green screen in certain bits just to get you in a mindset of like, okay, well, this is a garbage flight of whimsy, you know, yeah. Who cares, right? I'm not really judging it. And then other times it'll become very visceral and very real because it wants to punch you in the visceral guts.
Yeah. So I will double down on that, but also take Andrew's recommendation from, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, I watched the first half of the Glow documentary. This is the documentary about the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, for which the fictional show is now airing on Netflix. But, you know, it's a great little low-budget doc about, you know, this very, very fun, weird curiosity that, you know, in many ways connects directly to some of the archetypes that you see on the popular Netflix show, and in other ways kind of shows you a little bit more about where entertainment was at that time, and specifically just what happens when you give a bunch of hungry, talented young actresses and athletes who were kind of just short for things to do in Hollywood, what happens when you give them just a bunch of success.
Bandwidth.
And a national platform. So I've yet to watch the rest of it, but I'm going to download it for the plane.
My pick is, it's a repeat pick, but I don't know if you guys saw the Stranger Things 2 trailer.
Yeah.
I did not. I'm actually conflicted about whether or not I'm going to watch it, because I already know that I'm going to love it, right? And I think I'd rather love it, Brian, not knowing anything.
Will you really love it?
I know there's
some difference of opinion.
Wait, really?
About whether you will love it or really love it.
Oh, got it.
So I watched that and I'm like, you know what? I've been meaning to watch Stranger Things again, and we're watching the trailer right now. You should stop that so Brian doesn't see that.
No, too late. I'm all in. I'm watching it.
Yeah. After this, let's watch it together.
Yeah, sure.
It together. I went back to go watch, you know, Stranger Things, and, you know, just to watch. I watched this weekend. I watched all 8 episodes. And I remembered, like, man, yeah, that's right. They're only 8 episodes. I loved the economy of that. And that what I loved about the show that frustrates me about so many other shows, Westworld, is how long it takes for things to happen that you're waiting for them to happen. And I liked that Stranger Things, 8 episodes, 8 hours, and it moves. I'm like, because I remember being like 2 episodes in. I'm like, I feel like I'm 4 episodes in on another show.
Yeah. Well, mainly because the pacing is written, it's not a TV series so much as it feels like just a long movie. Like, not even like miniseries kind of pacing. Like, it feels like movie pacing the entire way through.
Except for the fact that this, I think that where Andrew, you know, is partly illustrating is that some things that in another show they would drag out for an entire season, mm-hmm. you know, or half a season or a 4-episode arc. Like, let's say, spoiler alert on season 1 of Stranger Things, but the discovery of Will's body. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that shows up, is dealt with. The people that you know, believe aren't going to buy it, don't buy it immediately, and we get a resolution on it fairly quickly.
Right.
Like, it's...
Yeah, in another show, we would have to meet the guy that made it.
We'd spend
an A-B type plot structure. We'd spend half of an episode tracking this guy down who made it, who dies, and we find him makes props. We'd find the mold. We'd find all this stuff. We get a much, much bigger explanation on that, which I don't think would make for a better show. I think it would be still a good show, but it wouldn't be as in watching this going like, why they had their presentation at Comic-Con and they said, and the reaction I've read, you know, secondhand is, it's as big of a reaction or bigger than Game of Thrones got. The trailer had more views than the Game of Thrones trailer, which, again, I'm very thrilled with Game of Thrones not putting it versus that. The enthusiasm from the people attending the Stranger Things was on par with, you know, the biggest Marvel release. The people who love the show love the show. Now, granted, it's a niche within a Netflix niche. So, you know, we often make the mistake of assuming everybody knows what this thing is, but that's not the case. But for those that do, it's pretty effing awesome. And so, and I'm like, man, like, you watch the care, like, you from the first 6 minutes, you love these kids.
Yeah.
Because you're like, they're friends. They have their code. They have their games. They have their little relatability. They have their own little structure. And, you know, and then it just builds off of that from so many places. You know, people try to think, oh, we're going to do that. You should watch this show. It's like Stranger Things. Like, oh, it's about like 3 12-year-old kids with a really cool friendship trying to understand adulthood. Well, no, but it's got, you know, conspiracies and stuff. And it's like, that part's great, but that's not, to me, what made the show so wonderful.
And people are saying in the chat room, and I can co-sign on this, Mikey Newman of Movies with Mikey just did a big deep dive on Stranger Things, which is also good in terms of exploring a lot of the fun storytelling stuff. And really something that I liked about the trailer is that even when You know, I think David Harbour and Winona Ryder have rightfully been praised for their performances. The trailer's all about the kids, you know, and that's yep. really that's what the show is. It is about these kids, and they also didn't do a thing like another big movie that debuted a trailer at Comic-Con where a character that is dead in a previous incarnation of the story, they're going to keep teasing apparently forever until the movie comes out that Superman's going to be in the Justice League movie. You know, whereas at least, you know, obviously we had the tease with, you know, Eleven at the end of Stranger Things that,
sure.
like,
that she's keeping
yes,
alive.
Yes,
wherever.
The most popular character of our show will be coming back. Yeah. Like, you know, we're not going to yeah. pretend that this, ooh, I don't know. Will she be here? We'll see.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and Variety running an article about Justice League talking about they have to – you read this?
No.
Because they're massive reshoots for Justice League. I mean, it was perfect. Don't get me wrong. It was perfect, but they want to make it perfect, perfect plus.
It was so much fun to do the first time. They just wanted to do it again.
Yeah.
And try to navigate all of the, you know, production schedules. So Cahill, the new Superman, apparently is doing Mission Impossible. The next one, he's got a mustache.
Ooh. Are they CGing out a mustache?
They are CGing out the mustache on Superman.
Oh my God.
I'm sure that'll
Paramount's
go great.
Like, nope, he ain't shaving that.
That's amazing. Okay, let's save the rest. I want to gossip more about all the Comic-Con stuff. That feels more like After Things, right?
Yeah. Stranger Things, go back, watch it. I really enjoyed it. It's only 8 episodes and loved it.
Yeah, again, fantastic.
It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.